This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and we start with the nearly 8,000 families in emergency shelter or waiting for it in the state. Two headlines this week. First, the state is consolidating families in several hotels. That means new challenges in keeping families connected to schools, job searches, medical care, other things. And Governor Healey has put a nearly $1 billion price tag on the system for the next fiscal year. Much to talk about here. In Studio 2, Jeff Thielman of the International Institute of New England, and joining us on the line, Chris Van Buskirk, state politics reporter for the Boston Herald. Jeff, welcome back.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Great to have you. And Chris, welcome back to you as well.
Hey, thanks.
So, Chris, I want to start with just the stats on this consolidation. Tell us, you know, how many families, how many hotels, just give us the basic numbers.
Yeah, so it looks like the state's consolidating shelters for homeless and migrants, homeless and migrant families. Two shelters, families moved out of two shelters last week, and plans to close about eight more by the end of the month. It seems like that'll affect about 250 families, or roughly about 800 as the fall comes to a close.
And do people know, have specific dates? Do they know in advance the locations that they're going, Chris?
It seems like there is some confusion around among the families, but, you know, those living in Woburn, Arlington, and Billerica are going to move to some new locations.
Okay, so just to back up for families before I, for listeners before I come to you, Jeff Thielman. So we are a right-to-shelter state. The state runs an emergency shelter system for families. Earlier this fall, for the first time in 40 years, Governor Maura Healey declared a cap of 7,500 families, sort of at capacity. After that, families go on a wait list. As of yesterday, the state said we had 7,511 families in the emergency shelter system. As of the 19th, we had 306 families on the wait list, and that, you know, they're in shelters, hotels, motels across the state. Now we get this consolidation, Jeff Thielman, and it's as I understand it, quite disruptive for families who are trying to stabilize their lives now that they've got some kind of stable housing.
Yes, it's very disruptive. I mean, what happens on the ground with the family is that if they have children, they've enrolled those children in school. If they have a child with special needs, that child might have an individual education plan. We have one child that I know of that has Down syndrome and is getting services from one of the districts. And we have about, I don't know, a dozen, maybe more women who are pregnant in the hotels that we're serving. They have prenatal care. They have doctors. Many of the people have primary care physicians now. They're seeing doctors. They're building relationships. What's happened in all these hotels is that ecosystems have developed with community partners, the International Institute of New England, other agencies that are involved, local school districts, and some employers in some cases. So these folks are building relationships, they're building community, they're getting services, and to move people without a plan and without good, clear communication is difficult. And you know, I think parents are having asked good questions. They've asked good questions of our staff, they've asked good questions of me. What happens to my child on an IEP? What happens to my child who's now safe and secure in his school? What happens? I've got a doctor I'm going to see. What happens there? So there's good, and some people have actually gotten jobs right near where the hotels are. So communities have built up, and there needs to be a good, solid communication plan, a good strategy, and actually an individual case management plan for each family to move them.
So Chris Van Buskirk, why is the state saying they're doing this? Is this a function of money?
The state's saying they're doing this to better coordinate the shelter system, and of course there certainly is probably a money aspect to it, especially as the state's staring down a nearly $1 billion bill for the emergency shelter system in fiscal year 25, and as there is a budget gap, a budget deficit in this fiscal year. So better coordination, and there certainly are fiscal challenges that the Healey administration is dealing with right now.
So I do want to, in a few minutes, get to this money part. I think it's really important, and it comes from a report that Governor Healey is now required to file after the last quarter of $1 billion in a supplemental budget that she'd been waiting for from the state legislature and that they passed just recently, and when we covered that extensively. Before we do, I kind of want to come back to the families' lives a little bit longer here, Jeff Thielman, because I think it is important to dig in here and understand it. And one of the things that I'll ask you to do, and we may have another guest join us, Gerald Gabeau, who runs another organization that's also working with families on the ground. Often she's with us. You know, she's the executive director of the Immigrant Family and Services Institute. Jeff, sometimes the two of you are on together. I want you to bring us to a family. Jeff, I want you to tell us, to the extent that you can without violating privacies that you don't want to violate, take us to a family and tell us their story so that we really understand who we're talking about here.
Sure. I can give you, I'll give you one example without going into names. But, you know, one family, a family of five, there's a mother, a father, a baby, and a woman who's pregnant, and then a child in the school district. And so this family is in one of the hotels. They are, you know, getting by. The mom is doing everything possible to take care of the baby. The father is trying to get a job to get some money into the household. They would like to get out of that hotel. The kid is in school, doing well in school, feels safe and secure. And this is a woman who's pregnant. So it's a pregnant woman, a baby, and a child in school. And she's got prenatal care at a local with a local practitioner and is getting good care, good health care. And volunteers in this town are driving her to and from appointments. And so she's got an ecosystem that is supporting her. And so what she is saying, this mom is saying, is, okay, what's going to happen to me when I move to a new place? Who's going to take care of me? Where's the support system for me and my family? How can my husband make enough money so that we can get out of the shelter system in the first place? So all these questions need to be answered. And so that's one typical family.
So I want to dive into a couple of things there. So that one implication is, and I'm thinking about this as a woman who has had babies, right? Mm-hmm. One implication is that the people that you think are going to deliver your child in the hospital setting or the environment where you're planning to deliver, suddenly maybe you have to change all those plans.
Correct. That's a big deal.
Yeah,
any mom, any parent, any family.
And there's questions about whether the and I want to backtrack again for people to understand. Every person who is in the state emergency shelter system for families is legal in the state and qualifies legally to be in the system. And there are laws in the state about your access to education and your right to stay in a school as a child as well, correct?
That's correct. There's the McKinney-Vento Act, which says that if you start in one school district as a homeless child, you can stay in that school district. And so the districts are offering children the families the right to stay in that district, but it means a longer commute. It means that they would transport the kids from one town to another town. That's a longer day. That is an option for children, and it may be an option they choose. I know in one of the towns, the families in Arlington have chosen to stay in the school district, and the superintendent there has promised to provide transportation to make sure they can stay in the school district, get the services that they were getting in the district.
And the school districts are at least, Chris Van Buskirk, I don't know if you can answer this question, but my understanding is that the school districts are actually on the hook for at least some of the costs of transportation because of that act to get a kid back to the school district if they are transferred somewhere else for their living situation, but their family wants them to stay. So I'm literally making this one up. If the family's in Arlington, they move to Lowell, but the Arlington schools would need to cover some of the costs of the busing back to Lowell every day for the child, Chris Van Buskirk.
I believe school districts are on the hook for some of the costs related to this. They are getting state reimbursements. They are getting state aid. Certainly school districts and local officials that I've talked to have argued that they need more money from the state to handle some of the increased school costs. But yes, they are on the hook for some of the costs, but they are getting state aid to cover some of the expenses.
And we're here with Chris Van Buskirk, who's the state politics reporter for the Boston Herald, and Jeff Thielman of the International Institute of New England, sort of following the latest in a couple of stories around the pressure on the state emergency shelter system for families and the costs associated with it. We've been talking about a move by the state to consolidate shelters and therefore move families in some unexpected ways. And Jeff, that's right? The families not necessarily notice. They don't necessarily know when they're going to go. They don't necessarily know where they're going to go.
That's correct. And what we've been saying, the resettlement agencies across this Commonwealth have been saying to the state, and by the way, our idea is being well received, is that we'd like to have these families move into apartments. We'd like to have access to a program called Homebase, where we can provide rental assistance for families. We'd like funding for good case management so that we can find them an apartment. We can help them stabilize. We can help them to get a job near where they live. We can enroll their kids in school. They can have some permanency in their lives. They could become full-fledged residents of this Commonwealth, working, paying taxes, contributing back, which they all want to do. So we have a proposal we put together called Rapid Resettlement. We've shared this with state officials. There's a lot of receptivity to it. I met with General Rice, and he's open to this idea. It's a question of breaking down barriers within state government to get this done.
All right, so the magic word there, Chris Van Buskirk, funding. And now we get to this other piece, right, which is the report that comes out this week where the governor's administration sizes up costs, not only for initial money the state is going to need for the emergency shelter system for this year, but then a nearly $1 billion price tag for the next fiscal year, which starts next summer. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, that's right. The Healey administration projecting $915 million. That's what they say they're going to spend on the emergency system, emergency shelter system, and associated costs in fiscal year 25. That includes shelter and associated services, clinical and safety risk assessments, intake centers, the family welcome centers that we've heard about, school district reimbursements, and other things. And of course, as they're looking at fiscal year 25, we still have a budget gap for this fiscal year 24, in the realm of $224 million.
Okay, so a price tag of nearly $1 billion for next fiscal year, a gap still of $250 million this year. That's got to be done on modeling. I mean, right, when we budget for the future, Chris Van Buskirk, we model. We say we think it's going to be this. Have we heard any feedback from anyone on whether the governor's done the modeling right? I mean, what if those numbers are too small?
That's a good question. I will say what state officials have told me is exactly what you're laying out. Because they know how many the maximum amount of families that can be in the system, they can sort of parse out what they think they'll spend. The most criticism that we've heard at this point is from legislative Republicans on Beacon Hill who have kind of expressed hesitancy with Healey's plan to cover the budget gap this year.
All right. So back to you, Jeff Thielman, then. And if I'm understanding Chris Van Buskirk correctly, then that is based on only the families under the cap.
Correct.
We're at 306 families as of December 19th on a wait list. So nearly $1 billion, and that's only for the 7,500 families at current capacity.
Right. So that's why we have to look at alternative approaches. And so, you know, the work that the resettlement agencies do in particular is we resettle people. So that means we receive people at the airport, we place them in housing, and we help them to find jobs near where they live and settle into new communities. If you think back to the 2021, 2022, the state of Massachusetts received about 2,200 Afghans. And in a 4.5-5 month period, the resettlement agencies placed all those people in apartments across the Commonwealth. Most of them, not all of them, most of them in apartments across the Commonwealth, and they settled into the state. We want to use that same model before families get into the shelter system, and we want state funding to fund it. We're not going to get federal money for it, unfortunately. We want state money to copy the resettlement model and use it to settle families in apartments. We'd rather see state money going to landlords in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts than folks who are running hotels or hotel chains.
Well, on that note, I think we have to stop for now. We've been following this story throughout 2023. No doubt in my mind that there will be significantly more to talk about in 2024. For now, Jeff Thielman of the International Institute of New England, Chris Van Buskirk, state politics reporter for the Boston Herald. I want to thank you both so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tiziana.
Thank you.